And thanks to the organizers for putting together such a wonderful meeting right away. And congratulations to BICEP and to all those involved. So I will try to get some new material, even though we had 2 weeks warning or whatever it's been. And the theme will be the obvious thing. I will take the conservative assumption of inflation as the interpretation of the BICEP results, and take seriously the Lyth relation to large field inflation in particular, and give an update, an overview and perspective on how that works in the UV completion afforded to us by string theory so far, where, you know, relative to the sort of original work that we did on that in, say, 2008, since then we've understood, you know, we have a more general understanding of the mechanism involved. We have simpler methods to use, which I'll try to share with you, as well as new examples that are in progress. So hopefully this will be a good enough mix of review and novelty. So this is my outline. So first of all, as everybody knows, there's this non-bound due to Lyth that relates just the number of E-foldings through the chain rule, the assumption that H over phi naught doesn't change much during inflation to the field range in Planck units. And so as a result of this, the BICEP measurement interpreted in terms of inflation without something more exotic going on implies a large field range in Planck units. And if you were to attempt a Taylor expansion around some fiducial point in field space phi 0, such a Taylor expansion, if you allowed order 1 coefficients in it, would produce a potential which would be completely wrong for inflation. Conversely, what we see is consistent with a very pristine, slowly varying source of potential energy over at a high scale and over this very large super Planckian range and field. And so, you know, these corrections need to be absent, and that can happen pretty easily due to symmetry conditions. But however it works, it needs any description of inflation to be complete really needs to account for these Planck suppressed corrections one way or another. And that could be that the theory of quantum gravity has a symmetry along this direction to good approximation. But because of this relation, this whole thing is a great opportunity for probing that physics in the UV completion of gravity. So for that, I'll take string theory as my proxy. It's not proven, obviously. This is the closest we've come to data in that field, I would say. But still, it's a theory of quantum gravity which satisfies, let's say, a lot of internal null tests of its own, involving thought experiments, counts of entropies for black holes, various mathematical consistency conditions, which are very powerful and give us a lot of confidence in this as a consistent theory of quantum gravity. So it makes a lot of sense to study this question there. Just to spell this out further, a common prejudice in the past among some had been that whatever the theory of quantum gravity is, it involves new degrees of freedom at or below the Planck scale. And if the field range is large, then as the field evolves over this large range, it could encounter all sorts of new degrees of freedom. For example, if you just model some coupling of phi to some other field, chi, as phi rolls, it lifts chi. And naively, this would lead to the possibility of, you know, enormous mass scales for these other degrees of freedom that take you out of a sort of field theoretic decoupling limit. So this is just a prejudice, but it led a lot of people to suspect the scale would be low. Although one can postulate a symmetry, and that's another very traditional point of view to take in field theory and beyond, which can control the corrections that we're talking about. But even if you take that point of view, which you can take at different levels from the bottom up as well as from the top down, given the super Planckian range, you really have to wonder if the theory of quantum gravity has the symmetry that you postulate. So we can trade one question for the other. And in string theory, the answer turns out to be yes, along directions known as axion, scalar field directions. There is an approximate symmetry of this type and a large field range for a reason that I'm going to try and explain in sort of the most essential terms that I can. So these kinds of fields you can think of as descending from, so string theory, among the other things that it adds, are the famous extra dimensions, which in which live all sorts of fields, including analogs of just the electromagnetic fields, the potential fields and field strengths. So let's think about some electromagnetic field potential A mu. Basically, you get one of these axion fields by taking these potential fields and integrating them over the extra dimensions to obtain a scalar field. The Lagrangian contains terms, the usual Maxwell-type term, and also terms like this, which you might be familiar with from symmetry breaking and quantum field theory, where there's a potential plus d of some scalar theta, which, although it has direct dependence on the potential field AM, it certainly respects the gauge symmetries of the theory, where A goes to A plus d lambda, because this theta transforms. This is known as a Stueckelberg coupling. It describes symmetry breaking at low energies in ordinary field theory. Now, what happens when you put these things together is that the integral over the extra dimension of this d theta is a quantized flux. So it takes some integer value that I've called q1 here. One can work on different branches with different integer values of that quantum number. Then on a given branch, on each branch, such as q equals 0, the potential just grows without bound along the remaining direction A here. So it's as simple as that. The whole theory has an underlying periodicity. And the period in field units of energy is strictly less than the Planck scale in string theory in limits of control. But each branch goes on forever. So it's really as simple as that. The fact that the period, the f axion, so to speak, is low, descends in a simple way from the kinetic energy term, which comes with inverse power of the radii of the extra dimensions and positive powers of the interaction strength, which, when you just trace it through, leads to this statement. I want to emphasize this as an example of the fact that although we have this big landscape of string theory, it's certainly not true that anything goes. In particular, in the same regime that we have control, large radii compared to the string tension scale and weak coupling, in that whole landscape that we have good evidence for, f axion is always small, smaller than the Planck scale. And there are other related statements. Now, I want to emphasize that also string theory has other types of fields, other so-called moduli fields, which descend from the extra dimensions, things like the size of the extra dimensions that I already referred to are dynamical scalars themselves. Those need to be treated consistently in order to have a valid mechanism for inflation. So that all goes into it. In the original examples where we exhibited this large field inflation mechanism in a very specific model, giving a proof of principle of large field inflation, we basically separated these two tasks. We stabilized the moduli, and in that context, found an axion direction in which one obtained a very nice large field range with some residual oscillations. Nowadays, we understand how to do this a little bit more economically, where the inflationary potential energy can help stabilize the moduli during the process. And that, in fact, has interesting effects on the whole, on the shape and so on. Another sort of comment from our current perspective, I want to emphasize that these axion fields are not rare, and this mechanism is quite general. as a mechanism for large fields with the conditions remaining quasi-periodic throughout the evolution. I say that just for a simple counting reason. Axions are half the scalar fields in the supersymmetric limits of the theory, which theorists have often focused on. In the more generic, less supersymmetric limits, in fact, the axions exponentially dominate the spectrum. So it really was a myth that string theory somehow prefers small field ranges and small r. I don't know a credible argument for that. I'm not just saying this now. It's been my view for some time. So again, on each branch, you get a large field range. There's an underlying periodicity. I made it sound fancier than it really needs to be. In fact, it's like a wind-up toy, especially in the example, our original proof of principle example. There was at least a dual description of it where it was almost literally like a wind-up toy. So in this picture, you can see that without the rubber band between these two blue points, there would be a periodicity. But with the more generic source in there, the red line, potential energy builds up as one goes out in at large fields. This mechanism predicts large R, and that prediction at least has been confirmed. So the obvious question from this point of view is, what is the phenomenology of this mechanism? And really, we're now quite far behind on that question. We have this example, this proof of principle that I keep referring to with McAllister and Westphal, where we made sure to dot all the I's and cross all the T's and give this example, which makes its own specific predictions. But these directions in field space are really quite common. And one generally expects, one has these large field ranges in general. The energy that I've been talking about, this d theta plus a type contribution, also couples to the additional scalar field moduli that I mentioned. And those adjust in some way that is dictated by the dynamics. So if indeed we start from this very basic structure with such a term, couple in the extra scalar fields that we are stuck with, these psi's and couplings and so on, those adjust to this built-up potential energy along this large range of field. And inevitably, they adjust to that. And that's a way of understanding why, when it came to this specific example, we landed on a shape that was less than m squared phi squared. It wasn't for some magic reason. It was basically because of that. So starting from such a quadratic term, one might more generically expect anything with some power that would be shifted a bit below 2. Now, upon hearing about the data, it immediately occurred to me that there, in the low energy action in string theory, there are also terms that start quartic with a similar gauge invariance to them, which we hadn't considered before as the basis for this mechanism. But we really should. And so in progress, we're looking at how those terms behave in hopefully complete examples. So I'll say a bit more about that shortly. Let me just give my view of the sort of different levels on which one could work on this problem. So obviously, one can simply operate from the bottom up. One can write down nice models, which are totally internally consistent and follow the rules of Wilsonian model building. Without any fine tuning, m squared phi squared is a good example. Natural inflation is a good example with traditional sinusoidal axions. The other extreme is to insist on, because for the motivation I gave at the beginning, accounting for the infinite series of Planck suppressed operators one way or another, working with some theory of quantum gravity, let's say in string theory. And there we can't be as systematic as one can be. As one would like, we can identify these mechanisms. We can give explicit proofs of principle by stabilizing all the extra scalar fields, and in such a specific example, show that it fully works, and for that example, give predictions. But you know, that process doesn't lead to a unique example, unless we are incredibly lucky, which I don't believe. So far, we've done that to insist that the yes-no question can be answered. But then we've tried to get a better picture of what we might expect more generically through, you know, this flattening mechanism I mentioned, and various other people have worked at sort of an intermediate level where you try and extract the essence of the mechanism, and in our case, we also try and extract the essence of the coupling to the moduli fields and see, you know, what range of predictions one might get from those considerations. But given the BICEP result that it's non-zero, it's highly motivated to do more of this, not because any given example should be taken literally, that would be absurd, but to give, you know, to understand better the range of possible values of R, et cetera, that might be generated. So to me, the obvious next step here is simply that, to look at, for example, this mechanism and see whether or not it will also generate large R in a complete example. So just a slight detour. One of the things I did in between thinking about these models and getting excited by the BICEP results is sort of dabble in condensed matter physics a little bit. And there I'm limited to bottom-up work just because I have no good ideas about the whole problem. And let me just try this funny analogy on you, which is the following. So in that theory, or in that context, we basically know both the UV theory and the IR theory. We know the UV theory is QED. Well, the IR theory, say, of BCS superconductivity is also well known. It's just the physics of spontaneous symmetry breaking. But you know, if you think just from the bottom up in that context, the transition temperature depends on things like the electronic density of states at some Fermi surface and interactions that you could tune in your bottom-up theory. But you know, in the real world, people only find materials with certain ranges of TC, and famously, high TC is difficult and gives much more strongly coupled dynamics. And that, you know, has something to do with the huge constraints that come from it needing to descend from the actual UV theory of real materials. So obviously, the case of gravity that we're dealing with, we don't know independently the UV theory. But again, string theory is a very good candidate. And I think it's clear that just working from the bottom up, even though it can be, you know, done in, according to the good official Wilsonian rules, is not completely satisfying. And so that's all I'll say about that. OK, so let me get a little bit more into new stuff. So in light of the data, we are looking at this possible extension of monodromy to cases which I would describe as flattened phi to the fourth instead of flattened phi squared. And you know, at the level of this sort of intermediate analysis, it's already been trivial actually to exhibit such an effect, starting from a certain, so these B fields are like higher dimensional forms of those potential fields A that I had before, and they appear both quadratically and quartically depending on certain flux parameters and the type of string theory that one does. So anyway, there is some subset of string backgrounds in which there's such a term, which, as I keep saying, couples in the way that's clear from this expression, but also couples to the size and the coupling of the strings and so on. So those couplings, combined with the dependence of the flux quanta on the size of the internal dimensions, can all be evaluated. And say we put the system on a very simple internal space, the dependence on, say, a ratio of two length scales in the problem couples to the inflaton axion field and to the fluxes in some way that's easy to calculate. And it's easy to show from this that, indeed, the relaxation of one of these moduli plugged back into the potential gives a flattened version of the original b to the fourth. So this is an example of the more economical sort of structure that I mentioned earlier, using the same mechanism that generically extends the field range of b, and letting it stabilize the other moduli during inflation. In this case, we've just accounted for one of them that is being stabilized during inflation. So now we're seeing if we can finish this job, just again to exhibit another example, which may appear, so another proof of principle like this one, but one which may appear at a rather different value of r. And we'll see how it goes, because the other moduli also adjust, and it might drop below this value. But it's something that we can work on very concretely, and that's in progress. So there's a lot. So that's one obvious thing to do, which we're in the middle of. Another is something that's been out there for a while, which is to study some effects, which are model dependent, but possible effects of this residual sinusoidal variation. One thing that is complicating about it is that, well, everything is a scalar field, including f and the coefficient here. And again, those can evolve a bit during the process. And when people go to look for this signal, they may try and take that into account. But I think as theorists, we need to make much clearer, if we can, the direction that we expect this to go and how big the effect could be, et cetera. So given the B-mode signature, we will certainly come back and stop procrastinating on that job, which I think, it's an interesting possibility. So far, it's just been constrained. There's no evidence for it. But I want to also emphasize that in the theory, this coefficient is very, very model dependent. So finally, another new thing I can say, and I can say it within 2 weeks just because it's a little bit acausal, is in fact, we realized we were sitting on another large field inflation mechanism within string theory, which we hadn't thought of as an inflationary theory, because at the time we put this out, which was just last fall, this kind of theory, which is just basically power law inflation with effectively an exponential potential, was excluded. But now it seems like it cuts through the top of the bicep region. So although at the time we were basically thinking about formal questions, trying to simplify our models of the Sitter space and accelerated expansion, and so doing, we were working with essentially power law scaling solutions. Maybe they could have application to dark energy, we thought, but not inflation. But now I'm calling it the undead, because it seems that it's currently viable, although it could get killed again soon, when we focus on m squared, phi squared at the end of the day. Anyway, I won't go through the details of this, but this is basically a form of assisted inflation plus monodromy, as it turns out, because one needs to account for the angular directions, which, as I was just saying, give a set of examples with power law scale factor, which can accelerate. There are sequences of models that are under good control with large input parameters. That approach w equals minus 1. And these are not pretty as models of anything. They involve a large input number. We were interested in simplicity and control as opposed to sort of model building considerations. But again, it's on the face of it, it's another mechanism for large fields, which uses kind of the other half of the fields that I was describing, the ones which run away to large volume or weak coupling. So I probably don't need to go through the details of it, but it's really just a form of assisted inflation that appears in string theory, which has a potential energy that basically involves sums of terms of this form. There's exponentials in canonically normalized fields that correspond to the size of the extra dimensions, et cetera. And these power law, these contributions depending directly on the axions, which, as I was saying before, begin as powers like this, or on brains, they begin linear. So anyway, this structure, as it turns out, if you write down generic terms of this kind, does lead to assisted inflation. And that, again, appears to be suddenly viable for inflation. So we're coming back to this to see if it's if it really is compelling as another class of large field models. Another feature of this particular construction is that it uses the leading terms in the string theory effective action, which entails very high barriers. There's a controlled solution somewhat below those high barriers, but you know the high energy scales involved in the inferred from the bicep result really push us in that direction where we need to control everything with you know stabilizing high scale barriers to these runaway directions. So that's another feature here. Okay, I don't really need to do this because Matthias already did. Maybe I'll just give the top-down motivation for this new sources business. So as Matthias already mentioned, the idea is one can have quantum mechanical production of sources as the inflaton rolls if it couples to other things, like a field chi or to the tension of a string, as in this picture. And you know there can be quantum non-adiabatic production of those objects, which themselves can then source gravity waves classically. And you know from the bottom up, that would seem very 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 contrived because of the fact that it has to not dilute, or it has to be repeated in any case. And that's one thing where this top-down view gives sort of turns that around because of the fact that with the underlying periodicity, I'm coming back to the axion case now. If it happens once, it happens again and again. So that part of it is fine. And in fact, in the original example of this axion inflation, what would be produced is a string. And the strings are pretty efficient sources of these gravity waves. It's easy to make it a marginal or better contribution. And I think in the string case, without the difficulty with tensor with scalar modes, but we definitely should revisit all that. Okay, and maybe it's distinguishable later. Okay, so I think again, the to-do list for us theorists, those who take seriously the need to treat the Planck suppressed corrections, et cetera, is you know it's a great situation. We're suddenly behind experiment, which is not where we speculative people are used to being. So we really don't have a very robust understanding of the allowed region in theory space. We understand that it's rather generic to generate large field ranges. We have this one proof of principle specific example with all the I's dotted and T's crossed, but obviously the mechanism is more general than that, and there will be more examples. So the easiest thing to do next is to just exhibit a few new examples that are complete, which hopefully will map out a larger range of R, or in so doing, we might find structural constraints that hone it in. But either way, that's something that's very, very easy to do next. By the way, to me, the exciting thing is the discovery of non-zero R at great significance, and there's no need to jump to anomalies and small sigma effects. This large field range is a big deal in itself and its significance. So, there's enough to do with that. Although the other aspects are of course incredibly interesting to think about as well. Once we've understood this at this level, it would be great if we could be more systematic. And for that, it's hard to see exactly how that's going to work, but I think we should try our best given the data and the amazing improvements that we've been hearing about, especially this morning, that are coming up. So I can just stop there. Again, this is a spectacular development. It compares to the discovery of the cosmological constant. It's even if it were just one number, it'd be incredibly significant. It's related to quantum gravity and possibly string theory in two ways, the quantum graviton being the simplest explanation and the huge field range. I think others have said all these other things. So let me just stop there.
Great, thanks, Ava. We have time for a couple questions.
Can you go back a slide just so that I see that what's supposed to be m squared, phi squared. So there, I'm just having a bit of a challenge describing that line as genuinely undead. The thing that's plotted there already has running in it, so this is not 6 or 7, but 8 or 9 parameters, and then that, and then it's in the top few percent of the allowed 2 sigma band. Am I reading that wrong? If I wanted to say that's ruled out at the percentage level, that diagonal line?
I mean, I guess it is kind of marginal, but okay. I mean,
as long as we agree,
I mean, I think what you're saying is, like with, you know, m squared, phi squared, or any of the other models I explained, we didn't incorporate, you know, a steepening or a running. For me, simply because, again, I view the large field range and the, you know, non-zero R's the clear thing here, and I'm got my eye on the other stuff, but I'm not sure it's so significant. But with any of these examples, one could imagine, you know, one could imagine sticking that in, and Yeah.
That has running in it.
Okay. All I'm saying is that my understanding of this, and forgive me if I'm wrong, is that you could take any model and you could steepen the potential at the end and, you know, get a something that would relieve the tension with Planck. And but having done that, you still need to generate a large R. Okay. And I'm really not advocating this example. This is not m squared, phi squared, by the way. This is this funny exponential potential case. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, if people are going to focus on the low end here, I think it's fair to say this is not excluded. I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying suddenly I realize it might not be excluded.
Do we have other questions?
So in this case where you're advocating using axions to get large field inflation,
yeah.
Does this make any generic predictions for what happens to the other axions? Like, are they all kind of up at this mass scale, or are they still relatively? Does it say anything generic about the other axions?
Well, yeah. I mean, my picture of the generic situation is that everybody is coupled. So there's a whole set of interlaced gauge symmetries with terms in the effective action respecting them that are generalizations of this. And my picture of the generic situation is that the fluxes are generically turned on, and so the axions generically have potentials like what I described here, which, you know, include these integer powers, but since one cannot Taylor expand a large field, their couplings to, you know, the size and shape, et cetera, cause those to adjust, and so it really is very generic to have a picture like this in all the axion directions. In order not to have that picture, you have to turn off the fluxes and also similarly get rid of the brains that also exist in the theory. So it's just for that reason. I mean, it's just a simple-minded argument, but for that reason, I think it's quite generic. I'm not sure if that was your question, but...
It was more about... About what does it say about the scales, about the mu's and the lambdas? So you've obviously picked mu and lambda to get inflation. Does that fix mu and lambda for the other fields or some ratio?
Oh, you know, I don't know how to do statistics on that offhand. That's one of the systematic things I would love to be able to answer, but I don't think I can answer that reliably.
All right, we have time for one more quick question.
I think you explained this, but I missed it. How do you, at one point you had a model that looks like phi to the fourth, and then with some flattening, so it's
yeah,
probably 4 minus something.
Where
does that 4 come from? Is there?
Oh, where's the 4 come? Good. So, like if you start in type. Okay, actually, let me go to the actual example. You can start in type 2a theory where there's a F naught wedge B squared term. This is coming from the generalized four-form flux I haven't written all the other terms that you know make it a full Stueckelberg term. I picked engage here if you like, but this term is analogous to the you know f wedge b squared. So it's there in type 2a. I happen to be working here with a type 2b t dual of it, where it's f1 wedge b squared. So you know that's the four. The four is the b wedge b squared, and that's all it is. And I'm quite embarrassed that you know I've been a broken record on this you know phi to the p less than 2 starting from the b squared or a squared type terms, right? But these other ones are there, and in fact, at large field range, if both are there at large field range, these do dominate. Whether this is there does depend on having you know one cycles where this flux can sit, so it's not all those there, but it's well worth checking. So. It's a data-driven observation.
Lots of more opportunity to explore models going forward now. So let's thank Ava. And next up, we have Nima Arcani.